The saying goes, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. But what if you don't have access to fresh produce where you live? Or transportation to the doctor if that apple doesn't work? Or someone to watch your kids while you're at the doctor? Or, you get the point. A person's success in managing their health and wellness may depend much less on what happens inside of a doctor's office than what happens outside of it. There's plenty about where we are born, grow, live, and work, and how these circumstances are shaped by access to resources that influence the health we can achieve. There's a name for it: social determinants of health. So as a community, how might we begin to address these social determinants? How might we make progress towards reducing health disparities and improving health equity? How do we create a future where people receive support to stay well, rather than just treating them when they are sick? It starts with research. It starts with conversations. It starts with listening. It starts with understanding. Supporting people in their journey to good health is part of how we can create a better world. I'm Ellen Beckjord. Good Health, Better World is a show about how stronger communities begin with good health for everyone, even outside the doctor's office. In episode 6, we hear from Aaron Dalton, Deputy Director at the Office of Analytics, Technology, and Planning for the Allegheny County Department of Human Services. We'll also hear from Dr. Joan Eichner, Director of Operations and Evaluation at the UPMC Center for Social Impact, and Catherine Boyle, a UPMC Health Plan Telephonic Care Manager. I'd like to welcome Catherine Boyle to the Good Health, Better World podcast. Could you tell listeners a little bit about our special needs program and about your role in particular?
The special needs program includes a variety of different types of members from the age of really 18, the whole way up till end of life. It encompasses members with intellectual disorders, behavioral health disorders, as well as just generalized disorders, diabetes, congestive heart failure, long-term management of people who have needs that are beyond that of your typical health. The intellectual disability disorder members have a much harder time getting their needs met, mainly because they can't communicate what their needs are or be able to orchestrate how to get those needs met. In those partnerships, we try to help care coordinate, communicate the members' needs more effectively to be able to get them not only the personal hands-on that they need, but also the supplies that are going to benefit to give them the best quality of life, as well as getting them back out into the community to have a social life. A lot of these members are capable of going to work, and they enjoy that. Through our partnership, I'm able to communicate with those care managers about what the needs of the individual members are, and then reach out into our community to determine what's available for those members. We have a wide variety of areas in which we cover, and I have way more people that I talk to on a regular basis, way more members that are under my case management. When I see somebody who is brought to me, let's say a complex member, he's been in and out of the hospital, he has supply needs that we're unable to get. And so I'll take that complex member, make my 3 phone calls to family, to the member themselves, if possible, and their case manager, and then determine where to start. It's definitely building relationships and meeting people where they are and being there for them when there's something that comes up that they need assistance with. And my favorite part is being able to get them the supplies they need, the care hours that they need in services, and keep them out of the hospital and manage their health so that they feel well. And when people feel well, they have a much better quality of life.
I want to thank Dr. Joan Eichner for joining us today on the Good Health, Better World podcast. Joan is the Director of Operations and Evaluation for the UPMC Center for Social Impact. Joan, welcome to Good Health, Better World.
Thanks, Ellen. I'm glad to be here.
We've had other folks from the Center for Social Impact on the podcast, but in your own words, can you tell us a little bit about the UPMC Center for Social Impact?
Sure. So the big ones that we tend to focus on now are housing, food, using human service data or social needs data integrated with health data to understand the needs of our members and patients and really begin to address those. And we look at special populations such as individuals with developmental disabilities or autism and the LGBTQ plus community.
So you mentioned the idea of integrating social service data with health data. Can you say a little bit more about what that means and maybe for our listeners or an innovative approach?
The reason that we want to do data integration like that is because as a health system, we don't have a complete understanding of our members. And that is because most of the data that we have access to, it allows us to see the medical care that someone has received, but it really doesn't give us a complete picture and understand what some of the things that might be impacting their health outcomes would be. And so data integration is an opportunity where we can have a more complete picture of our members. And the goal of that really is to just be able to provide the right type of care or preventive care to that person at the time that they need it. And our goal being to really promote their best health and well-being and not be reactionary after they've had a significant health event and just pay out a claim on that. We really want to be able to help them as their health plan to be best positioned to live their healthiest life.
I'm thinking about the degree to which information in the context of this discussion is really synonymous with visibility. The impact of social determinants, you know, is realized outside the context of the healthcare system. So if I try to kind of link this chain together, social determinants function largely outside the context of the care delivery system. Data integration then is key for the care delivery systems. How does the Center for Social Impact think about our role in the ecosystem?
Speaking specifically as the health plan side of UPMC now, the payer side, I think we are realizing that there are multi-level benefits to being in the social determinants space. We know that we can potentially save a lot of money by preventing emergency department use, for example. And so a concrete example of that would be looking at pediatric asthma. If we have the ability to understand which children frequently use the emergency department programs or supports or funding in the community that can help do in-home assessments, that can help with asthma management education, then the theory being then that we will see a reduction in emergency department use associated with asthma. Nobody wants to be in the emergency department. So that the financial incentive is one reason that we are in the social determinant space. I think from what I've seen nationally, a lot of payers are starting to think of themselves more in the business of wellness. And so it's more of a shift towards prevention. To go back to the asthma example that I just gave, there's a social return around that as well, because if a child has their asthma well managed, they're less likely to be missing for their child who is home from school. And so all of these things really connect, and there are a lot of benefits at different levels in each of these scenarios.
And some of what is happening then is a shift to more upstream intervention. And that shift, I mean, certainly principally, the idea that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right, is a super well-known adage, to moving our focus upstream or social sort of level factors that are preventing our population from really shifting into one where a system of care is supporting health and wellness and not just, you know, tertiary intervention. Does that sound fair to you?
Yes, that's right. And it's also thinking about these sort of non-traditional healthcare spaces that have such a huge impact on the outcomes that we care about and on the daily lives of you know, our members and our patients.
I know that the conversation about social determinants is happening with payers all over the country, but from a quality perspective, from a financial perspective, and from a principle-driven perspective, payers really are, I think, within the ecosystem, a stakeholder entity that has put all of our chips on prevention, right? Or we've really got the most significant imperative to make this shift away from reactive care and more towards preventive care.
Yeah, I would agree. But I think the benefits of being in this position, and particularly in a position where we recognize the value of working with community-based grassroots organizations and our public partners, is, you know, we bring a lot of resources that they don't necessarily have at their disposal. We as the health plan and community-based organizations are really working towards the same goals.
I wanted to ask you about your perspective on research. So the Center for Social Impact is situated within the UPMC Health Plan's Center for High Value Healthcare, which is an entity within the health plan that is very focused on research, the acquisition of funding to support research, the execution of research. I mean, one way to describe what research is it's the systematic collection of information and then the translation of that information into knowledge. How are you thinking about the role of research as the health plan works to address social determinants of health through the Center for Social Impact? How do you think about leading that work from a position of research?
The bottom line is we are trying to be savvy consumers of research and savvy users of research. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that really high, rigorous standard of research that you are so focused on in academia. We don't necessarily need a rigorous study to know that giving somebody access to nutritious food is likely to have a health benefit. But I think there's certainly enough evidence that some social interventions are very strongly linked to certain key outcomes. So helping folks enroll in public benefits like SNAP, for example, there's some solid research behind that, the health benefits and the health utilization outcomes associated with that. And so while research for research's sake can add to the nuances of what we know about that, I think we have enough evidence to know that it makes sense to act in those spaces. But that being said, program evaluation is very important to us. And that is a piece of what I do for the social impact team, is design evaluations that will help us specifically assess what we are working on and expand them when they show promise.
Let's talk a little bit more about program evaluations. You know, we are trying new things. We're trying to innovate, and we might not get it right every time. So what's the tolerance for failure, and how do you think about the sort of mitigating the risks of not getting it right every time in the context of also trying to build more sort of solidly trust-filled relationships with community-based partners?
Yeah. So I think in the sense of testing things and learning from them, I think we like to think of it less as failure than sort of mid-course corrections. So like, let's set things up where we're able to, you know, monitor them and, you know, change them as needed.
Now, that mid-course correction means that you're changing things along the way, which is a different way of building evidence and may kind of violate some principles around standardization and holding things constant during some experimental period. But it sounds like that approach is really critical for doing this work in an applied context.
Right. It does make it a little bit of a less clean evaluation if you're changing things in the middle. My current thinking on the right way to do this at this moment is to sort of document the process. That is a really critical piece of this. We're not just concerned with evaluation. We really want to understand implementations, because there's a lot of things like partnerships and trust and extenuating kind of circumstances or things that come into play and change how we would approach some of these things. I think also to add to that, the the member or patient experience is so critical in a lot of these cases too. Like we may be piloting relatively small interventions, but they go deep in specific people's lives. Those impacts are huge, and those oftentimes can get lost. We have to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, medicine has a history of racism and abuse, and you know, we are coming from a position of power. You know, it goes on and on, the ways that folks have been sort of excluded or marginalized within healthcare and medicine. And so, you know, we need to recognize that and kind of come to terms with that and understand what we can do to, you know, we can't correct what's happened in the past, but we need to, you know, honor those communities' feelings and begin to understand how to bridge those gaps in a way that makes sense to them and in a way that they feel respected by. And so, you know, in my opinion, doing that kind of work is very challenging. And so I think, you know, our strategy is to really find key partners that are deeply embedded in the community and be able to build trust with them and work through them to, you know, kind of develop projects that are mutually beneficial, but ultimately have the same goal of trying to overcome health disparities and increase health equity, particularly for populations that have been left out in the past.
That was really well said. Thank you. So, Joan, can you tell us about some of what has been learned already through the program evaluation activities that the Center for High Value Healthcare or Center for Social Impact in particular have conducted?
Sure. So there's a few examples I can walk you through. So a really interesting one that relates to data integration is the health plan is working with Benefits Data Trust, or BDT, which is a nonprofit that helps to enroll individuals in public benefits. We are working with BDT to help our dual eligible members, so those that are enrolled in both Medicare and Medicaid, and many of them are eligible for benefits like SNAP, but they are not currently enrolled. And so we are partnering with Benefits Data Trust to contact members and help them enroll in public benefits that they are eligible for. And they can do multiple public benefit applications at once, so it's not especially burdensome for the individual. And so we are working to rigorously evaluate what the health and health utilization outcomes associated with benefit enrollment, particularly SNAP. So what impacts that would have on hospitalizations, emergency department use, and then like diabetes condition management, since it's associated with receiving increased nutrition through SNAP. So that's one example. Broadly, we have a very innovative data sharing arrangement with our County Department of Human Services. We are able to create a list of shared clients with Allegheny County Department of Human Services, meaning anyone who is a UPMC health plan member who is also receiving services administered through County DHS. And with this list of individuals, we're able to understand what their human service use is. And that can help us to see important things like, oh, these members receive caregiver services in the aging program, or these members, these pediatric members are receiving early intervention or home visiting services. And so there's an opportunity here where we can have a more holistic picture of our members by seeing what human services they're utilizing, which is not necessarily the same as understanding their social determinant needs, but it is a clue into that. Even more concretely, it gives us a way to connect our care managers with their service coordinators.
Thank you, Dr. Joan Eichner, for being on the Good Health, Better World podcast. If anyone listening would like to learn more about the different initiatives that Joan discussed, the Center for Social Impact, that information will be available with the episode notes. So pleased to welcome Erin Dalton to the Good Health, Better World podcast. Erin is a deputy director at the Allegheny County Department of Human Services in Pittsburgh, and you're responsible for the Office of Analytics, Technology, and Planning. Would love to know a little bit more about what your title means in your day-to-day world.
We have dedicated a lot of time and staff to making sure that our program folks and the community and our clients have as much information as they can to do their jobs, and building tech to support our many different program areas. So just for background, we are the largest county department. We have about $1 billion a year budget, most of those funds coming from the state and federal government. And we're responsible for lots of different services. So everything, sometimes people like to refer to it as cradle to grave, from early intervention and prevention activities to child welfare, homeless services, mental health and substance use treatment services, aging services, and a whole lot in between.
This is a podcast focused on social determinants of health, you know, which is a broad kind of umbrella term that typically refers to things like transportation, food security. This episode is focused on information. And I'm actually so excited to talk with you because I think information is just such a fascinating topic, and it has so much leverage in the context of a system. I'm interested if you have thoughts to share on how you think about information broadly in the context of social determinants of health, whether it be information that we have to acquire to know for whom social determinants may be a barrier, or information to enable people to access services around social determinants of health.
We collect data to run our programs and services, all of which are essentially addressing social determinants of health, right? So, at the Department of Human Services, that is our core work. We don't call it that. I mean, we sort of just call it work. We use those in a number of different ways and have done a lot of work to try to integrate data for the purposes of integrating care. So first and foremost, we're collecting information to help people. So not unlike the health plans, we've brought together data from various sources, whether it be public benefits, behavioral and physical health care, child welfare, criminal justice, schools, even birth records and other vital statistics. And we return it back to the people who are in the best position to use that. Clients should be able to get their kind of integrated information so that they can best manage their own care and connect with service providers and services that they may benefit from. But also on behalf of the whole kind of network of providers, we share that data back at the person level when people are working directly with that client, so that they can also integrate care. Many people, particularly in some of the more acute services, have many different services that they may be accessing, and numerous case managers and other kind of helpers who are trying to work with them.
For listeners who might not be familiar, and you've talked about a little bit of this, but could you say some more about the types of issues that the Allegheny County Department of Human Services works on?
So the probably the thing that we talk about most, it's our area of most direct care, and it's an area of most concern in the community, perhaps, and that's our child protective services work. So that's where our caseworkers are required to investigate allegations of abuse and neglect. And then if there's reason to move forward, we open cases. Sometimes those cases become court active, and we are always trying to keep families together. But, children have to be at least temporarily removed. Most often they are staying with family or close kin in order to make sure that kids are safe and families can get stabilized. So child protective services is a huge area for us. We work closely with our partners at CommuniCare Behavioral Health. We are responsible, the funding partner and the responsible party for Medicaid-managed mental health and substance use services, as well as services for the uninsured. So that's certainly a very big area and an area of collaboration and partnership with UPMC. Homeless services is a big part of our work. We're also responsible for elder abuse and aging services, as well as services for developmentally disabled and autism kids and families, adults with autism. So those are some. We have some newer areas. We run childcare services for this region, and early intervention, a number of other prevention programs.
When we talk about social determinants of health, we pretty quickly, I think, get to also talking about health equity. And in the realm of technology specifically, which, you know, certainly over the last 20 years, but every day, continues to change the landscape around health and healthcare. So where are we seeing technology afford more equity, and where are there some places that we need to be mindful of so that it doesn't exacerbate inequities?
I guess technology is really just functioning, perhaps around the values of the agency and the community and the policies that we're pursuing. So it probably says more about, the agency and its values than it does that, you know, then it is really important that the agencies themselves understand and acknowledge the role of racism in our work and be mindful of our role in that and trying to undo policies and procedures and systems that have had disparate impact. And then I think there are lots of ways that technology can help. Theoretically, technology can make access to care much easier. It's not perfect now, but I think, we're working with a lot of partners to try and make it much easier for people to find care, find the kind of care they want, crowdsource information about that type of care. And so people can make their own informed choices about where they want to get supports. And similarly, we can be sharing data and information, both quantitative and qualitative information on outcomes of these services. So people can be also using that information to decide where they're going to get care. So those are some positive things. I think a thing that I think that, the jury is still out on, but we've pursued, again, compared to others pretty aggressively, is using our data and modeling to help our workers make critical decisions. So it depends on what your current practice is, whether these tools are improvements or not. So I'll just give two examples. In 2016, after a number of years of work and work with the community, we put in place a predictive risk model to help our child welfare caseworkers make decisions about what moves forward to investigation. So for context, we get about 16,000 calls to the hotline every year. In some of those cases, we know a lot about the family. We've had previous experience. The caller provides a lot of details. And then in others, there's very little information on which to go on. And so in the past, our workers really used, they're very well-trained workers. And like many jurisdictions around the country, we go out on about half of all those calls. So back in 2016, we implemented a tool that helps us use the data we already have to help them make those decisions. So the worker is asked to kind of weigh the current crisis and then use this risk score as a companion to make a decision about whether to proceed. And an independent evaluation from Stanford University, and all of this is up on our website, found that we were making more accurate decisions and we did reduce racial disparities. Wow. In that decision making. So, but I think there's lots of reason for folks to have concerns about that, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, not to say that the data doesn't have its own biases, but we can use it to perhaps undo some of the biases that exist in our systems. Yeah. So to give another example of where we're using tools to help make decisions is in the homeless services area. So pretty similar to our work in child protective services, we get there's a lack of sufficient supply of housing for people who could benefit from that housing. And around the country and in Allegheny County, we were using an actuarial tool to make decisions there. And that kind of tool is a kind of question and answer tool. So, someone would call requesting housing services. We would ask them if they had been homeless in the past. We would ask them if they had previous criminal justice system involvement and so on. We had those data in our systems. And critically important that we provide these scarce resources to people who have most risk of adverse outcomes. So we produced a model, again, working with partners who to predict the likelihood of one of three adverse events happening in the next year if left unhoused. So a jail booking, a mental health inpatient stay, or four or more emergency department visits. All three things are both things we would want to avoid and really adverse outcomes for the system and for the person. And so we implemented, we compared that tool to the actuarial model we were using and just found it to be much more predictive of those kinds of adverse outcomes. And we find doing some research that when we give permanent supportive housing to the highest risk folks, that it has a bigger impact on reducing those adverse outcomes too. And so it's really important to provide those services. And we implemented that back in September, and hopefully that can bring some more equity to who's getting this housing.
The Hello Baby Initiative has a number of value propositions. And one of them that I understood is there's a sentinel event, in this case, the birth of a child, that connects folks to services, to you. And you use that opportunity to do a broader assessment of needs that may not be related to the birth of the child per se, but to be then proactive in anticipating what other social needs a family might have. So when you intervene to address needs that have emerged because of the birth of a child, or that can be addressed, you know, for the needs that emerge when you have a new baby, you're able to take a broader view and use that opportunity to listen to and learn from the client about the other things that are happening. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, that's accurate.
The information flow around social services, I can appreciate, is, you know, is certainly not simple, but I guess I'm wondering if you think we're making big strides in that, or what's been advancing progress in that realm, and what challenges might remain?
This is our first real test of that in any concrete way. Of course, health systems, human services providers always want to be reaching out, finding and identifying people in their community who could use additional health service, preventive health services, preventive and supportive care. So this is the, you know, we take an event like a baby being born and then use data to reach out proactively because, and I just think the use case here is really strong too. We are, as much as we want to support all babies born and all families born in Allegheny County, we also worry about, you know, the high and persistently high infant mortality rates here and too often we get child welfare calls at the time of a critical incident, a serious injury, when we had never known about that baby before. So we feel some obligation to try to support families earlier so that they're never involved in the child welfare system, so that those kids and families grow up you know, strong and stable. And so there's a really strong use case in this case for reaching out. We haven't done proactive engagement in this way before. And I think you're right. Like, does that work? Like, let's see if that works. Can we reach out to families? Are we reaching the right people? And then really importantly, can we engage them? Do they want to work with us? Whether what we're offering is helpful. So, you know, we may think we know what people can use, but, you know, only the people themselves will, you know, they'll judge for themselves whether these are useful and supportive services. And I think the jury's out on that too. I think our evaluations to date, you know, not local evaluations, nationally, haven't had that much sophistication. So I think these are both kind of big questions. If we didn't think we could help, if we didn't think we could bend the curve, if we didn't think it was a shot that was worth taking to try and support families early, we wouldn't do this.
Can we advance our charge towards better health equity if we prioritize the folks who've been traditionally underserved, if we prioritize communities of color within a group of people who have been identified as needing services? Is that a function of prioritization? And then second, you mentioned a moment ago, you know, that engagement is a function of how well the services work, absolutely. But there's also this mediating role of trust. Can you even get people to engage? And so I'm curious about how trust factors into the work that you do.
I think that is, I'll take the second part first, the issue of trust and engagement. I think it is about services being helpful, but I do think you're right, that it's about trust. You know, why would you open the door to this person who's coming to say they might can offer you help? One of the things that I think we've long believed is that people would rather get services from their neighbors, if you will, than family and community than the government per se. And so almost all of our work is done through community-based organizations. We're much more of a funder than we are a provider. We support about 250,000 people, you know, 1 in 5 county residents every year. And we do that through hundreds of community-based providers, not through our own workers. And so it's not us. In this case, it's Healthy Start and the people that they've hired to knock on those doors and try to engage families. And it's we're testing a kind of a dyad approach of a peer and a social worker working together. So that issue of trust, we think that's one way of thinking about trust, is that people both want really good care. You know, people know what they want. They want really good care. They want the best. And they're more likely to get help from people they know and people, you know, who have been in their shoes. And then we really do try. So we try to be super transparent. We try to engage the community and our stakeholders in, whether it's advisory groups, whether it's online forums for weighing in on our budget requests, you know, and we hire a lot of people who we've served in the past, if you will. So people with lived experience. Some of our colleagues at the Department of Human Services helped to start Allegheny Family Network, which is, you know, a group of families who advocate and support other families.
Would love to hear a little bit about your background and your career. How does someone grow up to become a deputy director in the Allegheny County Department of Human Services, overseeing the Office of Analytics, Technology, and Planning? What has your career path looked like and how it's led you here today?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a straight line. I've done a lot of criminal justice reform work, started my career at the federal U.S. Department of Justice in the research part in the Clinton administration. So that's the National Institute of Justice. Definitely wanted to do local work after 5 years working for the federal government. Came to Pittsburgh for grad school and then worked for 3 years for a group called One Vision, One Life. It was a gang outreach program. So working to set up a violence prevention program that focused on street outreach with Richard Garland, who's now a professor at the University of Pittsburgh and still doing a lot of work in that area. But also was doing research work, like had an adjunct appointment at RAND doing criminal justice research work there. And so, you know, always interested in the data sides of that work. And then I began working at the Department of Human Services and running analytics about, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago. So, and I still spend a lot of time on criminal justice reform. Reducing jail population, working with the courts to improve, to expedite time to case disposition, trying to make sure people get help whenever possible instead of incarceration and so on. So that and child protective services have been a lot of my focus over the past couple of years.
Is there anything else you'd like to talk about during our time today or other things you'd like listeners to know about with respect to the work that you and your team are doing or your thoughts about other angles on social determinants of health?
I think something that's really nice about Pittsburgh and Allegheny County is that it's small enough where people know one another. And I'm glad that the health systems and healthcare is really interested in these human services and supports for people. This is what's happening as we work together to do that work. We will see nothing but improvements and support for more support for those services and people. So I'm excited to be working with folks on that. There is a world in which, whether it be the state or the health plans, or you know, just try and create all of their whole new network when one exists, that could create further duplication and fragmentation of an already somewhat challenging world to navigate. And I think we just have to be careful not to do that. And that's what I've seen locally, is people really wanting to work together, not to duplicate, to build upon, and to make sure that people are first and that they get what they need.
Thank you, Erin.
Yeah, good to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to Good Health, Better World, presented by UPMC Health Plan. Be sure to come back next time.